This is the Closer and Closer podcast, where we bring creatives from all over the world together for you to learn from, relate to, and be inspired by. As fun as creativity is, we know it can get really lonely. So our LA-based agency is bridging that gap with weekly conversations with inspiring creatives to help you grow your career. Let's get started. Welcome to the Closer and Closer podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Andrea Mahamadriz, and I'm a part of the artist marketing and partnerships team here at Closer and Closer. Today, we're going to get to know someone very special who you may have heard on the podcast a handful of times. Kaiten Vance is the marketing partnerships director here at Closer and Closer and my new co-host on this podcast. In the 10 years of his career, he's cultivated a love of storytelling, questions, causing a good ruckus, and of course, people. He believes in things that make the world more connected in real and tangible ways, like marketing. He's a father of two incredible boys and a man who wears his heart on his sleeve. Welcome to the pod, Kaiten Vance.
Wow. Okay, that's a very lovely introduction. You nailed the heart on the sleeve part, that's for sure. I think if anybody's met me over the years or worked with me, they would probably say the same thing. It's both a blessing and a curse at the same time. It's like, oh, there's the heart. And then I'm like, oh, no, my heart.
You're like, ouchies.
Why'd you do that?
No, it's the best way to operate. And it truly is. I mean, you know, not to be too corny, but one of the values here at CNC is love what you do. And nobody does that better than Kaiten Vance. Oh. So thrilled to have you.
I'm really happy to be here. I'm actually also happy to be interviewed on the Closer and Closer podcast in the company of so many incredible artists. It's pretty awesome.
I know. Well, to be completely open and honest with everybody, we kind of didn't have a guest lined up for today. And I was like, you know what? Y'all have heard from Kaiten a handful of times, but you don't really know Kaiten. So I thought this was the perfect opportunity. And kind of to get started on that journey of getting to know you better as a person and as a host and as a professional, can you give us, and this is so broad, but the history of Kaiten Vance, how you got to this place that you're at today, and especially connected to like your creativity, because you are a super creative person.
Wow. It's a big question. I'd say how I got here today. So I think I got really lucky in the last 5 years, I'd say, of my career. My curiosities kind of led me in a path around branding, storytelling, content, and I really just was noticing how much content was shifting online. I'm a proper millennial, so I grew up on the internet, but I do remember a time before the internet. So stories for me were mostly like movies and newspapers and books. Mm-hmm. But when the internet came around, things changed quickly, and mediums shifted drastically online. But I noticed in like 2008, 2009, there's this thing that was getting real huge in the world called YouTube. And on YouTube, there was so many creators that were gaining audiences. The same thing happened on Instagram. The same thing happened on Facebook. But there wasn't many places where storytelling was like shifting. And YouTube was really one of those. And at the time, I was actually working, not at 2009, but at the time I started paying attention to YouTube heavily, I was working at a film company. And I was like, hey, guys, we need to start paying attention to how people are making content on YouTube, because it's changing how people consume media. And, you know, people were making their own movies on YouTube and Vimeo and all those other platforms. And I was a huge fan of people like Casey Neistat, Peter McKenna, Dan. Oh, gosh, I'm going to forget his name. He's an Australian dude. It doesn't matter right now. But
I don't think I know.
I was noticing how these creators were telling stories in ways that were super approachable, almost vlog style. They weren't caring as much as like around the cinematic shots. They didn't really care if it was lighted really well. They were really going for like that authentic thing that TikTok has kind of officially owned at this stage of online. But I really gravitated towards it. And I just kind of followed that thread of curiosity when it came to content. And I was like, I think I understand the space a lot. So I started learning like crazy. And I also started consuming content on all of the social media platforms pretty heavily. And I was like, I want to learn how people are doing things in this space. So I started like taking Facebook blueprint classes of like how to run ads on Facebook and Instagram. I started learning how like strategies around branding and how brands were utilizing these different spaces. And I was working at a film company at the time called Gorilla here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Shout out to Gorilla and Eric Johnson, Eric Michiel, and Ross Vandewa. they were all incredible human beings that let me explore like crazy. And they had a movie that was coming out that they had worked 10 years on making that Gary Busey is in. The movie's called Camp Manna. It's an incredible movie. I'm an extra in it in certain scenes, and it's very funny.
Oh.
It's a comedy with Gary Busey in it, which is crazy enough. But they were like, hey, are you interested in running the social media campaign for this movie? And I was like, excuse me, what? Because they liked my philosophy around micro content is what they called it. How I approached that kind of thinking. And I was like, absolutely. But I hadn't done anything in that space. I definitely had never ran an actual ad campaign with real dollars before. So I read Gary Vaynerchuk's Crushing It over a weekend. And then I started taking even more classes online of how to even do stuff in the space. And they ended up firing the PR agency because my campaigns were outperforming what they were doing. So,
it was really
awesome. I probably still didn't do things extremely well, but it was my first at bat actually trying my hand at like proper marketing. And once I kind of got that in that experience, I was like, I want more. So I just pursued that heavy. And after my time was done at Gorilla, I went to a company called Polytech. It was a private equity held company. They wanted a content creation team lead, and they were building an entire department there. And that's really where I got to test all of my knowledge and theories about branding and marketing and content in real time. They were acquiring brands left and right, but they primarily were like, hey, here's a brand. What can you do with it? What do you want to make online? And what team do you want to build? So I had like this weird opportunity where they wanted to go super fast, but I had to prove every step that I did and the ROI of all the actions that I did. And my goodness, that was a trial by fire. And I worked there for about 2.5 years. We took the team from, it was me and one other person. When I was done, there was 12 people on the team. We were managing 6 different brands. We distributed over 2,500 pieces of content in those 2.5 years. I started an email marketing for all of the brands, SMS marketing, meaning like text messaging marketing. These were all like D2C brands that in the mold making and casting space. It was a learning experience to say the least. During that time, I started consulting with Closer and Closer. And that's when I met you.
Shout out.
When my time was done at Polytech, Drew made an offer I couldn't refuse. So now I'm here at Closer and Closer, which is an artist representation agency. I'm sure I left plenty out.
And we trapped you for life, and now we have your soul forever.
Right.
And I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, it's been a wild journey. I'm sure I left plenty out there, but yeah, that's, I think, the somewhat high-level version of it.
No, that's awesome. And I love how like self-initiated all of it was. Like, it was just a genuine interest in what was up and coming. I'm sure you got tons of like, yeah, okay, especially working at a production agency, a ton of like, sure, like, whatever, your little content on YouTube, like, isn't, especially at that time, it wasn't really validated the way that it is now. It still probably isn't as much as it should be, but I'm sure you got a lot of pushback in terms of like, okay, but how important really is this? Or like, how well is this going to go? So it's really interesting to hear you just like being like, I really believe in this, the power of this, and I want to take it and run with it.
Yeah, I mean, I just was noticing how people were like completely building their entire careers off platforms that they themselves built. They were telling their own story.
Yeah.
They were approaching it their own way, and they're finding their audience. Seth Godin talks about this like crazy. I mean, you even use the Seth Godin quote mentioning me. Like, he always talks about causing a good ruckus. I love his books. I've read most of his stuff. And he is like, all you need is 1,000 fans to build your career. Like 1,000 true fans that will actually support you. And I really, it's very true online. If you have 1,000 people that like will pay $15 for whatever the thing is that you make, that's a livable wage for you for a year.
Yeah.
Like, and if that audience grows to like something that's actually substantial, like 10,000 or 100,000 or a million, like we're so used to seeing all these metrics online where there's like millions of followers and like there's the Kardashians out there. But the reality is you're a creator or an artist or a maker of any kind, if if you've got 1,000 true fans that is going to pay you $5 a month for whatever it is that you do, you can live off of that. And that like did not exist 15 years ago. And that is, to me, really mind-boggling and really cool.
Totally. No, so exciting. And I think, I love that we're already on the topic of creativity, because I think something that these creatives a lot of time are not keen on are this aspect that you do, is like the building your own platforms and putting yourself out there, the marketing, to put it simply. So I want to know, because again, like I said this at the beginning, you are so creative as a person. What is it that kind of drew you to this, and how do you keep it creative? How do you keep it fun? Why is this what you chose when you could be doing a million other creative pursuits? What other creative pursuits do you have on the side? What have you been doing throughout your life? Big question.
This question could go 1,000 different ways. I'll start to answer it like this. Marketing has got an extremely bad rap, very justifiably. Marketers in general are typically after the short gain results, or like short time results. Like, how can I get the squeeze the most juice out of anything in the shortest amount of time? I approach marketing a heck of a lot, just way different than that. I always view marketing as ways of creating true connections between brands and people, ultimately. More like a classic Regis McKenna approach, relationship marketing, if you will. I think that the biggest brands in the world typically know their audience so well. They know what they need to make for that audience in a way that's going to actually change their lives, either for the better or worse, depending on the company. I prefer that it's for the better, obviously. And I do believe, and I do believe that through really true stories, you can shape people's thinking and change people's ideas on how to approach pretty much anything. And I think we see this played out time and time again throughout our culture and society. So for me, I was like, how can I be a good guy in this arena in a way that's true to me? And that has always been a very interesting challenge, because like I've been presented with certain moments where like, ooh, I could get some really short gain or short term benefit by doing these tactics. But that's only going to like create a certain amount of dollars for maybe 6 months, but it might not actually be long term valuable for this brand. Like, we might get a whole bunch of new customers, but if their experience, for instance, when they bought this product, like the product wasn't ready to ship yet, or the shipping is going to be delayed for months and months and months, those kinds of, like, that's not a good experience for those people that made those purchases. Well, if you translate that to art, or if you transfer that to something that you've made, or some a product or service that you offer, and it's something that's like your own blood, sweat, and tears that you're really passionate about, that's where the magic is. That's like actual where connection can happen between you and another human being. And that to me is like the magic of online. Like, you can actually create real tangible connections with other humans in a way that is undeniable. And we've all seen it. And you actually have true influence on people's perspectives. And that to me is like a huge gift and curse at the same time, similar to my wearing my heart on my sleeve. So,
isn't everything?
Yeah.
No, I think that's such a good way to put it. And I think, I mean, that perspective that you just shared is probably really relatable for a lot of commercial artists and creatives and people in the industry that Closer and Closer is in. That there, I mean, there is obviously, you know, I don't want to say dirty side of marketing, but like the less nice side of marketing, where it's just, you know, you can do things quickly and for a quick buck, as there is with anything else, any other creative pursuit. You can, yes, you can totally sell out, whatever, do the whole thing, which some people do, and it's totally fine if that's what you want to do. But there also is a way to do marketing and illustration, commercial illustration, you know, whatever, anything in this industry that is authentic and true to you and just sharing and relationship building.
Yeah.
That you can monetize, which is always good.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're going to get like somewhat philosophical here. I think the act of creating itself is one of the coolest things that a human being can do on the planet, period. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's an illustration. I don't care if it's a movie. I don't care if it's a piece of content. I don't care if it's a book. I just think the act itself is almost like this sacred space where you can take your life experiences translate them into a medium of some kind, and then share that with the world. To me, like, there's so much there that you could unpack for years. But like,
yeah,
why would you ever make something and then not share that thing with the world? I think that's like what actually makes the thing art. Leo Tolstoy talks about, what's the book that he wrote about in creativity? He wrote a memoir, and how he describes art as making someone else feel something. And our illustrators do that all day, every day, with the things that they make on a day-to-day basis.
Totally.
What Diana Beltran can do with paper makes me feel things, and I can view it through a screen. They, you know, when artists are sharing their behind the scenes process of how they create their illustrations or draw in their notebooks or paint in their on canvases on their big old desks, all of those things, to me, I'm sitting there going like, holy cow, this is amazing and incredible, and I'm witnessing this in real time. And that to me is like never lost on me. And like when I'm like consuming that content or watching it on TikTok or whatever, I get caught up in the actual human thing that's happening there, and I think that is like really fascinating and incredible. Can that be monetized in a way that's bad for them? Absolutely. But can it be monetized in a true and authentic way that's going to benefit their career and life and change everything for them as a human being? 1,000% yes, too. So, I view all this stuff as like really cool and fascinating. You can pull on any string, and it can get interesting quick.
Totally. No, I agree. Speaking of creativity and creating things, aside from just creating marketing, you've created something really amazing in your life that you've touched on a couple of times. I don't know if ever on the podcast, but we've touched on it in conversation, is that you've written a book, which to me is, that's again, like we were just talking about art being mind-blowing. That's literally mind-blowing to me that you sat down, wrote a whole book, and then put it out into the world. Your girl could never. But that, you know, obviously that was all you. Like every piece of that project was probably all you, and I can't wait to hear more about it. So to start us off, can you tell us how you kind of got to the point where you were like, I want to write a book? What kept you motivated throughout that process?
Sure. The funny thing about talking about this book is like, I'm sure there's people right now going, oh, great, he's about to pitch us on his book. The reality is you can't buy this book because it's out of print.
You can't buy it, so it's not a pitch.
Yeah, this is definitely not a pitch because you cannot purchase it anywhere. I think we created, and Louise Intention, I'll get into those details. God, I don't know. I can't remember, between 300 and 500 of them when we first, it was like a self-published thing, but my buddy David Wenzel, sadly, RIP, he died of brain cancer. He's an incredible human being. Him and my friend Ben Gott, you can find him online, like Benjamin Edgar. He's an incredible designer. He creates fascinating objects that you would love. Anyways, they created a publishing company for my book. I called Wish You Were Here. And this is back in 2012, at least. It's over 10 years ago, for sure. At least over 10 years ago. This might be 2010, 2011. It doesn't matter.
That's crazy.
But I wrote a book. It's a love letter to my daughter, who's in open adoption. And I wanted to write a story around my life experience then, so that when my daughter was 18, she could hear how much her father, her biological father anyways, loved her. And you asked, like, how did I sustain myself through that process? It was really like a love letter at the end of the day. So that kind of, like, from a motivation standpoint, it was like a true human connection that I really wanted to establish, because open adoptions are beautiful things. But if that's not something that you ever imagined doing with your life, if you're someone that, like, grew up in a big family like I did, I'm one of 12 children. And I'm the oldest boy in that family. And I always imagined a really awesome family. And luckily I have that now in my life. My wife and I have two beautiful boys, and it's incredible. And I do have a relationship with my daughter who's in that open adoption, which is also incredible. But at that time, I didn't know if I was going to be able to have a relationship, because I had no clue what an open adoption was.
Yeah. Because nobody talks about that stuff.
And And also, dudes have been royally screwing up for a long time in that category. So it's understandable that I didn't know anything about it. But that's not what we're talking about. But that process for me was an act of sharing myself like extremely vulnerably, but also like just wanting to tell the truth of the situation from my perspective so that my daughter, when she's old enough, could understand something. And I also know that when you share like a vulnerable story, that a lot of people will be able to resonate with that with their own stories that are somewhat similar. Like one of the weird things about that experience is like I had people reach out that I didn't know that had bought the book that told me about their relationships with their fathers and how meaningful this was because some of them didn't have relationships with their fathers and how much it shifted their perspective because they always just assumed the worst of the situation instead of like realizing that maybe they didn't necessarily know what was going on. It was a really cathartic, but it was also a transformational piece of art that I created and put out into the world that my buddies helped me self-publish and create a publishing platform for it. And then we also like threw this big book release party. My buddy Ryan Hum at the time did like this book trailer with me where he interviewed me. Oh, and then like we did something. Drew Milton, the founder of Close and Closer, did the calligraphy on the front cover for it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like he actually designed it, which is really incredible. So the entire experience was one of like reflecting about myself in a very intimate way, but then sharing it with the world. I'm a huge book person, and Andrea knows this, but everybody that's listening probably has no clue. But like, I buy books like it's a drug. Like I have a problem.
Yeah.
I could buy a book a day.
Can confirm.
And this is a quick side note. Buying books and reading books are two separate hobbies. I just need the world to know that. and I'm addicted to both of them. So I wanted to also contribute to the world in the way that has changed me. Like I've read so many things that have helped shape my worldview, shape my perspective, literally helped me in my career. Like all the stuff that I was talking about with Polytech, that was like a testing ground for me. But I had read all of Simon Sinek's books, all of Seth Godin's books, and countless other ones around like marketing and branding and storytelling. And I was like, ooh, I have all this knowledge in my head. Can I now test it out in the real world? Well, when I wrote my own book, I was like, how can I share my life experience in a way that's actually going to help not only my daughter, but other people that encounter these words? Because I had encountered so many words and stories in my life that had changed me. So I was like, I want to participate in this narrative as much as possible. Yeah.
No, I mean, first of all, that's amazing. And you said so many good things in there that I think are wonderful. And I think like, A, you know, you had the personal conviction to do something like that. Because like, again, huge creative endeavor, something a lot of people couldn't do or wouldn't have the motivation to do maybe in that way. So just having the personal conviction of, you know, one-on-one wanting to connect with that daughter, that is beautiful and amazing in and of itself. But then just seeing the rings of how that spirals out into, I mean, and could be the entire world, like such a wider community, like going from the one-on-one relationship between you and your daughter to the relationship between like you and the immediate people around you that were helping you create this project and like just as in it probably as you were in making sure that it was a reality. And then moving even out, another ring outward into the people that don't even know you that then went on to read that book that you touched and, you know, built some form of community with, connected with on a personal level is incredible. It's so beautiful. And that would have never happened if you weren't willing and able to share those stories, you know?
No, I think you're right. And the cool thing about when it sold out, it's not like I got rich off of this thing. I mean, we sold it for...
You're telling me you're not loaded?
No, I mean, that's the crazy thing about most, I'd say, self-initiated projects that aren't backed by something like a brand or you're not getting paid in advance. Like, there's definitely ways of making money off this now. I could have self-published the sucker like on Kindle at the time. That's just not the route we went. We did like... print copies that we could hand to, that I could literally hand to people or ship it to them, and we sold out of all of them, which was really, and we never did another printing.
That's amazing.
I should have. I actually don't own a copy myself. All my siblings do, and my mom and dad do. And
no!
This is what's weird about it.
I was gonna say whenever we meet in person, because fun fact, Kate and I have never met in person. I want to read it.
Well, I'll make sure and steal one from one of my siblings.
Steal one from someone.
Yeah, but like. I took all the proceeds from that and I bought me and my buddy a dinner. And then I bought my first piece of art from the profits of that. Like it was this giant wall painting that my buddy Ruben made. He's a Grand Rapids artist and tattooist now. And like, it was like a $300 painting. And at that time I was like, I never would spend $300 on anything. Yeah. But like I was, yeah. Especially art, like when you're like in your young 20s and you've got rent and things, like you're not spending $300 on a piece of art. At least I wasn't at that stage.
I can promise you I would never.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, it was like this participatory act in the creative process, but also in like the larger artist community here in Grand Rapids where I live. And I just wanted to participate in all of those stories in a way that was meaningful. And I think that's what most artists want. And I'd say the artists Absolutely. On a roster, especially after talking with them the last, I think I've been here close to 6 months now, 5 months, six, I can't, I don't know. They all are part of this weird community, and I mean weird intentionally, of illustrators that have, illustration's been around for a long time. And the art and lettering and calligraphy and all of these different things, there's so many people that want to participate in, be the best in this space, that it kind of fuels their passion in a way that like keeps them going. And there's been so many people that have talked to us in our check-ins that we do that are so impressive with their drive to share their work with the world. It's undeniable. And like that drive to share their work with the world, in my eyes, is marketing. And actually is the thing that connects them with their audience and what makes them attractive to other brands to hire them for their work. That to me is the sweet secret sauce, but sometimes it gets co-opted into...
Totally.
Hey, you're just trying to be a shill and sell me something. Like, no. Like, absolutely. I think marketing can be a human activity like the act of creating something is. It's just another step in the journey. Oh gosh, I'm going to mess this quote up, but Chase Jarvis talks about there's like four steps in a creative process. There's like the development of the idea. There's the making of the idea. Then there's the, it's like a realization, but then the final act is like a sharing act where you actually have to put that thing out there into the world and just kind of repeat that cycle over and over and over with whatever it is that you're making. And I was like, that's absolutely true with any creative project. If you don't share it with the world, it exists, but it mostly just exists for you. Like, aren't we supposed to share our gifts with the world? That's my perspective. Mm-hmm.
Totally. No, and I think it's so awesome. And that's what I love about working for creatives in a marketing sense is that, you know, it makes it so much easier to do what we do, and we genuinely believe in what our artists are doing. Yeah. Like, and I think we've both talked about this before, but I definitely, you know, it's so funny that I decided to do marketing because I'm very shy and I don't like, you know, I don't like feeling like I'm selling something, but with the artists, I mean, they make it so easy and I have no shame about it because I believe in what they're doing and it's so amazing and interesting and cool. And yeah, I mean, I don't think I've ever looked at an artist that was sharing their work and been like, oh, they're just marketing themselves. Like, they're so lame. They're sellouts. Because, you know, they believe in what they're doing. They love what they're doing. So obviously, like, why wouldn't you want to shout it from the rooftops and have everybody hear what you're saying? And I think that gets forgotten a lot. It's like, just seeing it with our artists and seeing it with, you know, the greater artistic community, I think that gets forgotten, is that, like, it's actually not a dirty thing to want people to see your work. It's actually very natural and it makes sense because your work is awesome.
Yes. Everything you said is absolutely true. And to elaborate just a touch, like, when you've created something as an artist and you find it moving, other human beings are going to find it moving. Now, of course, not everything
probably
is
more so.
Yeah. But it's not like everything everybody makes is for everyone. That's fine.
Totally.
There's different styles for different people and there's different audiences for different folks. And that's actually the beauty of this. That difference causes good tension between different people. Now, but I still above the mind, if you don't share it though, you'll never find those differences and you'll never find your people and you'll never find the people that 100%. Love what you make. And that like reciprocity of that cycle of like sharing something and then someone seeing it and loving it and talking about it and then them sharing it with somebody else, like that's like just good energy that you're putting out into the world. That's like just some, as the kids say, good vibes these days.
Dang, so hip.
No.
No, yeah. I think you put it perfectly. And I know we've been kind of like up in the clouds for a while. So I want to bring it back down to the book and to practical advice. Because, you know, the why behind this book is literally what drove it. Mm-hmm. And it was also like the final product was kind of also like the why was baked into it. It was really obvious mm-hmm. and it was beautiful and it was out there in the world. What is some advice that you would give for artists who are shy about either mm-hmm. sharing the intentions behind their work or maybe don't even clearly have their intentions in mind when they're creating? Like they just, you know, because I think we run into that sometimes with artists is they're like, oh, you know, I just like to draw. Like they like to undersell themselves. Mm-hmm. So what would you say to those artists and how would you encourage them to just be like loud and proud with why they're doing what they're doing?
Yeah, I think Simon Sinek says people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And I think that why is really important for artists especially, because knowing yourself in such a way that you are comfortable sharing that process and that vulnerability around this beautiful act that you're doing is a scary thing. And there's, billions of people on this planet that are actually terrified just even having a conversation with another human or getting in front of people and like giving a speech. Or could you ever even fathom sharing a piece of art with a wide audience that could scrutinize it and tear it down and burn it down? Like, yeah, that entire act is
totally
terrifying.
Valid fear.
Yeah, but like it's really a true, and people have had terrible experiences, and online can be a brutal bully zone of just, you know, trolls trying to tear you down. But I am also of the mind that it's also people that are insecure that typically are trying to tear other people down. And mm-hmm. if you're getting hate for something, most likely that person is hurting that is hating on you. So I go, when mm-hmm. it comes to these acts of work that if you're scared to share it yourself, I go inward. Like, why? Like, why are you? Is there something that's unresolved within yourself that you haven't addressed yet that you don't want the world to see? And this isn't me saying, advocating that you need to share everything about yourself with everyone online all the time. No, there are plenty of successful people that only share their work and never share anything about their family or their personal life, or even sometimes like, you know, their own secretive why behind their art. But I do know that they're mm-hmm. still leveraging their skills in a way that make people attracted to their work in a fascinating way. So I'm going the long way around here. I promise I'll land this plane. The why to me is like that creative act, that like tangible human goodness of the act of creating. Our artists have that innately and they can't help themselves. So if you're out mm-hmm. there and you're like struggling with this sucker and you like, you have this desire to make things, but then that next step of then sharing it with the world doesn't feel like part of that process, I would just examine why that is. Because if you can get to that next stage, I think it only enhances the first stage, because you can find your people and you can find other people that are going to resonate with your work in such a true way. I mean, countless artists since Instagram was started have found their careers because they would make something and post a photo of it online. And then mm-hmm. thousands of people would all of a sudden see it and comment on it and be like, this is the most coolest thing I've ever seen. And everyone, I don't care who you are, loves getting that kind of feedback. Now, can you get too high on your own supply with it? Duh. Just like you can get too low with other people's opinions that are trying to shit on you. That doesn't matter. Like, ultimately, you're trying to find your people that are going to enhance your work and help you find your own voice and refine it and keep going on this act of creating. Like, if you can keep that cycle moving, you'll only create more and more and more for the world in really beautiful ways. Yeah. I think I answered the question.
Absolutely. No, you definitely did. Yeah. And I think people struggle with it, but it really is just such an innate part of the process. And it's something that, you know, it's mostly just getting in your own head mm-hmm. and getting in your own way. And once you kind of break down that barrier, you realize that it's a lot easier than you might think. And also, I think you kind of touched on this, but like doing it authentically to you too is the best way. Because you mentioned like there's people that, you know, don't put their whole business out there. Mm-hmm. They're not talking about their family or like the, you know, the nitty gritty of why they made this piece or whatever, but they find their own way to do it. And I think that's just as good, even if it's, you know, not the the typical way or what you would, yeah, what you would immediately think when you say share process.
Yeah. I think, humans are really good bullshit detectors. Not all humans, but most humans are. We've been advertised to our entire existence. And if you were born post 1990, the internet has only existed. So like, the reality is with all this stuff is like, we're inundated a lot with imagery, messages, the whole nine. And if you're trying to put something out in the world that you find beautiful, or that you are convicted of, or that you are trying to like change things with, I think that's a good human act. And you will find people that are attracted to those kinds of things. So I just examine the areas in myself that I didn't want to share for a long time because I had my own hangups. So I encourage artists and makers and creators. Like in my previous gig, I worked with a ton of makers, people that like literally would do these giant river tables or create these big molds and then create like these Star Wars figurines that encased in this crazy resin with like X-wings in it flying through canyons. And I'm like, how the hell did you come up with this? And they're all just making stuff. But like they then posted it on Instagram, and then like thousands of people around the entire globe want to buy one of their spheres that are encased in this globe. Shout out to what's his name? Scott's Mini Wood Shop on Instagram. But like he creates these wild, just circular X-wing spheres with a lathe in his tiny garage. And he posted a video online, and he sells them for like $150. He's retired. He doesn't need to make any money, but he like pays his costs and then ships them to people, and they're like blown away by him. I have one. I love it. He gifted it to me. Scott's Mini Woodshop on Instagram. He's an incredible human being. And all he did was share his process of how he makes it. Other people could steal it, but that to me Nobody is like does. The cool act that he's done. He just like shares this process of how he makes these, but people attach so much meaning to it and resonate with it. And I'm like, that's good. How could you deny the goodness of that act? So, yeah.
No, that's awesome. Sorry, I got a little bit distracted looking at Scott's Mini Woodshop. He has 100,000 YouTube subscribers. That's crazy.
He's only got like five videos on there too.
Yeah, simply must give him a follow. This is right up my alley. Okay, back to creativity. Sorry, after that woodshop moment. Last couple questions as we wrap up. What did this process teach you, if anything, that you really have taken into the rest of your life?
I think that if you're creating something, you're probably, how do I want to say this in a clear and concise way? If you are creating something, you are either sharing with the world a story that you have told yourself, or you're creating something that others can participate in. So if you're creating an illustration, or if you're creating a piece of art, or if you're making a video or making content, you're inviting someone into your own story. And that's an extremely vulnerable act. And that to me is super courageous. So what I've learned in this process of like when I wrote the book, and when I make my silly, like encouraging reels on my Instagram page, most of that is me trying to be vulnerable in a way that I want other people to be vulnerable online with online as well, because I want to see more of this in the world. And you can't know that about yourself unless you kind of step out courageously and start doing it. And so what I've learned is that like the act of creating is actually pretty brave. And like I find people that create things, whether it's online or physically or digitally or whatever, I just think they're very impressive, and I'm always blown away by it. And like, I'm super impressed by it. And I tell them all the time the first check-ins that we did with them, I just stopped and would just tell every single one of them, like, I think what you do is incredible. I really mean that.
And you meant it.
Like, really do. I'm blown away by it. What I'm like a golden retriever when it comes to this stuff, because like, I am genuinely impressed by people making things. it really mm-hmm. is cool to me, and it really is impressive. And so what I learned is that, like, I want more people to discover this, because I think the more people that create would probably not only learn something about themselves that they never knew, they also might heal some real dark stuff that they never understood about themselves. Because that act of creating, you have to look at yourself truly in order to make things ultimately, or else you'll run into walls, because mm-hmm. you might run into fear, or you might run into an insecurity, or you might be like, I can't do this. I'm not the expert here. I'm not professional. No, like, that you have to expand a little bit more to share things ultimately.
Love it. Love it. Cool. I think that's the best place to wrap up. First of all, Caton, thank you so much for sharing not only your story, but just some vulnerable things that maybe, again, you know all about sharing and vulnerability, so I don't need to tell you. But before we wrap up, last question. Where can the people find you?
I'm on Instagram. It's probably the best spot to find me. I do have a TikTok, but it is, you know, you can find me there. It's not as good as my Instagram. I've had it forever. So at Caton J for Instagram. But you also can email me if you got any questions about marketing in general, branding. I nerd out about this stuff. So that's Caton at closerandcloser.co, like all the other ones. But like, Andrea and I are here. If you guys also, we're super curious in general, if there's anybody that you'd love to hear from that's on our roster. Like, we want to keep providing as much value in this podcast. I feel really stoked that Andrea's like, hey, let's just interview you. I was like, oh, yeah, sure, let's do it. But the reality is, like, we have incredible artists on our roster that work with some of the biggest brands in the world. And the stuff that they make is incredible. And like, I'm on a regular basis just humbled to be in their company. So we want to also know from everybody that's out there that listening to this, if there's anything you want to know about, let us know, because we want to ask the good questions. So yeah. Caton J on Instagram.
We are here for you guys.
Yep. And then you can just email me. I don't have, TikTok and Instagram. Those are really the only place. I'm on Twitter, but like, does people still use Twitter?
I deleted my Twitter long ago. Awesome. Well, thank you for being here, and we'll probably both see you in a week.
Cool.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Closer and Closer podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review to get the latest episodes. To find out more about how Closer and Closer connects commercial artists with their dream clients, strengthens their careers, and more, head over to our website, www.closerandcloser.co, or sign up for our weekly newsletter, The Dose.